Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Peace Talk. Peace Talk is a program sponsored by the local chapter of Veterans for Peace. It's our way of telling the community of Juneau that there is peace and a seeking of peace throughout the world, and it's part of our contribution to the conversation that we must have about vital issues of war and peace. Of course, we can't do this all the time. We're on a schedule here where we have a program about once every month. And so we try to pick highlights from the last month and share them with you. Tonight, I'm happy to say we are featuring a recording or a series of recordings of Senator Mark Begich, who was here in Juneau just last week. And Monday afternoon, concluding his extraordinarily busy time here, where he spoke not only to the legislature, but also to a bunch of loyal and active supporters at a banquet on Sunday night, he called together a meeting of Juneau veterans so that he could address the question of what is happening in the Senate with respect to veterans' issues. Excuse me. He spoke for the better part of an hour, and we were there to record it. Unfortunately, however, we had some technical issues with the recording. The recording of Mr. Begich was pretty good, but the questions raised by the veterans in the audience were not clear. And so I am going to presume to frame the issues, and then we're going to play Mark Begich's responses to other people. I'm sure you'll forgive me. The first question actually was to welcome him and to basically raise the question of the status of veterans' bills in Congress. And Senator Begich had this to say.
You know, I serve on the Veterans Committee. We had a bill up last week on the Senate floor on veterans, which had a lot of provisions in there. One, creating a two-year budgeting, so it creates a better flow of how the dollars go to the VA. We had additional health care benefits for dental care for veterans, speeding up the disability claims, about a Hire Act, which puts more resources toward hiring more veterans, a variety of legislation that was combined into one. It didn't make it through the cloture vote, which means now we were, I think, three votes short, maybe four votes short, so we're going to try to bring that bill back up again. I think we'll get there at the end of the day. It's one that really renews some pretty important provisions for veterans, but it also enhances some of the veteran benefits. As I said, on dental is a good example. Another one is in-state tuition. This would allow veterans to receive in-state tuition in the states they are, maybe not be residents yet, but they've moved there, maybe they're an active military, and they're now about to become a veteran, so they can get that in-state tuition price. So we're busy moving that forward. We also, a piece of legislation that I worked on, which we now have really good success, we hope to expand it, and this was pretty historic memorandum of understanding between Indian Health Services and the VA. And the way this works is, if you live out, and I'll use Nome, for example. Nome has a brand new, beautiful Indian healthcare hospital. I mean, just exceptional hospital, $180 million facility. But if you're a veteran, one of 800 veterans that live in that area, if you want to use your VA benefits, you can't use them at that facility. You have to fly to Anchorage or Seattle to use your facility. It makes no sense. I mean, it's crazy. And so we were able to work an agreement between Indian Health Services and the VA. And now those veterans, we have 26 tribal consortiums now that have agreed on this across the state, that the veteran will have a choice. They can use that hospital or that clinic or go to Anchorage or Seattle. It's their choice. That will, and it's for Native and non-Native veterans for utilizing Indian Health Services. And Indian Health Services gets reimbursed by the VA. And on top of that, it's not money taken from the existing VA resources. It's actually a separate line item we added in to the tune of about $60 million nationwide for this, even though Alaska is the only state that's benefiting right now. This will actually be expanded. We anticipate two areas of expansion. One, tribal lands in the lower 48. We have a lot of veterans that live on Indian reservations but have to get in a van, drive who knows how long to a clinic, get their service, and wait for everyone else to get done, and then get back in the van and drive out. Yet there is a clinic sitting right there that they would have preferred to get their services from. So we're expanding this now to tribal lands. And the next and third component we believe will be very valuable is those clinics that are not Indian Health Services, but those clinics that are federally funded that the VA member could go to them. And, for example, in Anchorage, it would be the Anchorage Neighbor Health Clinic, as an example. I don't know what the federally funded one is here in Juneau, if there is one. I don't know. But to give you an example, that they could go to that service or the clinic if they wanted to, the VA clinic or to Seattle. But the choice would not be limited to the VA service centers, which we think is a huge plus. But this first piece, we have seen already hundreds of veterans taking advantage of this now. We had one in Sildovia. Actually, he was in Homer, and I was talking to him at a VFW hall, and he was madder than hell because he couldn't get up to Anchorage, and he had a sore, he had something wrong with his foot or something, and he was mad, and he couldn't, you know, he couldn't get up there, he couldn't do this. The woman from the Sildovia clinic, right across the water, said, well, you could have come to us. And he goes, no, I can't because I'm not Alaska Native. She says, no, you're a veteran, right? He says, yes, and pulled out his card, and he says, well, you're qualified. You can come right over there. We can take care of you, and we'll do all the paperwork with the VA to get reimbursed. So there's a few little glitches in the process, but it's really been very successful, and we're going to continue to push that through. I know there is some information, correct or incorrect, depending on how you look at it, but in my view, it's incorrect, and that is the veteran benefit for COLA, which was reduced in the budget in 2013, which would have taken effect in 2015, has all been reinstated. So there is no reduction in COLA, despite what anyone wants to say or think about. Or, as I say, when I go online and I see these consistent, well, you cut COLA. No, COLA is in place. It's 100% back in there. So that, if that's a question that folks might have. The last thing I'll just mention, and that is the veterans issues. We do have, the Veterans Committee is pretty active on a lot of pieces to the puzzle. The one, which I kind of mentioned, but I want to expand on this, we did this for the VA medical side. Now I want to do it for the VA services side, and that's like, you know, tuition and so forth. That would be on a two-year budget, in other words, pre-funding or forward funding. And why is that important? When we did it on the medical side, the net result was we had an ability for the VA to start hiring nurses and other practitioners with a little more stability. In the past, it was, is it going to get funded? Is it not going to get funded? With the other services, they're not on the two-year cycle. So you have the VA on half two-year cycle and the other half not. It makes no sense. We have bipartisan bill, both in the House and the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, and every single veterans organization supporting this bill. I'm the main sponsor on the Senate side with Senator Bozeman from Arkansas, Republican, and then there's two House members that have a companion bill. We're moving that forward. To be frank with you, we have a little pushback from our own people within our own structure, and that is the Senate Appropriations Committee and the House Appropriation Committee. They don't like these kind of bills because it takes away their authority for 2 years. I'm an appropriator, so as a sponsor of this, and Bozeman is an appropriator, this is usually unheard of for an appropriator to sponsor bills like this, but we think it's the right thing to do. Our message is appropriators are fine with this. We need to move it forward. That's more internal, but we're trying to do this because we'll make a difference on benefits. That large bill we tried to pass last year, we had a veteran's ID program in there, which would have meant it doesn't matter what level of veteran you are, you get an ID. And the reason we wanted that is because there's a lot of stuff that veterans get for being a veteran that is in the private sector, discounts and so forth, but there's not a full ID yet to be utilized like that. So that's in our bill. We think that will come back. Here's what this bill did. It recognizes additional health care issues and expands to more veterans. I forget what they call them. I think it's level 8. I can't remember all the different levels, but it expands them. But it also put money to the bill to cover that. So, because if we didn't put the money toward the bill, we have all this new requirement, no new resources, and the backlog would go this way. This bill actually had money to do that plus additional money to shrink that backlog that exists today down. So it was kind of a dual hit in a positive way. That's why we put money to it to take care of it, because we're realistic. You know, you don't want to add more requirements and then say, oh, by the way, I'm sorry, you can get service, but you'll never get it. Because there's no, so we added money to that, plus we added money to take care of the existing backlog.
The next question regarded, for was from a gentleman who was a Vietnam vet, and he indicated that he was concerned about the quality and the availability of service. He was a gentleman who had received a Purple Heart for wounds received in combat. And he indicated that he was diseased from contact with Agent Orange during the Vietnam War. He went to the local VA clinic that you may recall was opened a couple of years ago after a tremendous effort on the part of our delegation and the VA itself, but didn't feel that he got the proper testing for his condition. He didn't get the right assistance. And he received treatment orders in July 2013, but he didn't finally get any treatment until December of 2013. When provided this information, the good senator stated as follows.
In December, we had a choice. We were going to come to a budget arrangement, a deal. The government was going to shut down again. And if you think that's not going to affect veterans, it was going to affect veterans. This last shutdown did. If you were filing for a disability claim, you were not getting it. It wasn't going through. If you were in college trying to get your tuition payment, stop. And go through the list of other benefits. So one of the things we knew was going to happen here was it would not take place till 2015 January. Why did we do that? Because we knew we'd come back and do some trimming after the budget passed to fix a few little things like this. We knew it. Is that the perfect way to do a bill? No. I didn't propose that cut. I'm going to tell you that right now. Now, I'll give you the number of Congressman Cantor who has hid from this action. But he did it with Ryan. That's who did the cut. Now, I get it because they have other issues that they have on retirement systems and all kinds of things. I get that. But my philosophy has always been, since I've been in that body, I've never supported when they've come up in the Armed Services Committee. There's been times where they want to increase TRICARE or cut certain kind of services or reduce some of the pay levels or at least the future pay levels, and I've voted against those. But on this one, we knew we can get through that bump. We can come back and fix it, and it was through my amendment, my bill 2 weeks ago, that forced the card on this. Because someone was going to wait all the way to December of 2014 to fix this. I said, so you're going to let veterans go through this agony for 12 months when you know we're going to fix this. Someone just played politics. So what I did is I put a bill forward that put the COLA back into place on the Senate side. We did not have enough votes for cloture. But I went to the floor, and you can see it on our website, and I made it very clear what this bill would do. Very simple. You're for vets or you're against vets. We made a commitment and a promise. We need to fulfill it. If you're not willing to do that, then we know where you stand. Monday when that passed, Monday before last, 94-0. That immediately moved the bill by Wednesday, Thursday, we were done with it. But it does, we recognize. I mean, this budget situation we are in is a very serious situation. Now, the good news is we've come from $1.4 trillion down to about $500 billion annual deficit. We got some more room to go. We knew we'd have to fix that. But when you look at the proposal, I know where it came from. Of course, they don't want to have anything to do with it now. But it's fixed. And I hear you, because I keep this card that someone gave me. It's actually a brochure that they got when they joined the military in the 60s. It's a little, propaganda, whatever you want to call it. But it's a simple card that says, here's your benefits. Listen. And I keep that by my desk. Because if you joined, we made a commitment to you. And what really aggravated me about this, and you'll see my rants on the floor on this, we didn't pay for two wars. But then it's now time to pay up the bill on veterans benefits. And now everyone's saying, well, we should pay for that. Well, yes and no. We spent $2 plus trillion on wars. This is a $6 billion issue over 10 years. We can fix this problem. And that's why we pushed the card. And that result is coal's back. But I hear you. It's very dicey. And I recognize that. And, you know, and I've taken my lumps on it, but I knew in my heart we would fix this. But, and I wanted to do it quick. And that's why it's done today.
In addition to the questions regarding the operations of the clinic and the status of veterans' cost of living allowances that the senator just addressed, there were questions about access to the VA clinic here in Juneau. On the ground floor of the federal building, the VA clinic exists. They're very welcoming and they're very supportive of veterans who visit them. But there are a number of veterans who don't want to visit them because they have to go through security in the first floor of the federal building, just like any other visitor to that building has to go through the metal detector. They have to take off their shoes, have to empty their wallets, or at least put their wallets in a little tray that'll go through the X-ray. And many people find that off-putting and difficult to contend with, particularly when they think they're just going to go get some medical treatment, a shot, or something like that. And so the senator spoke to that issue.
I will do this. I'll make this commitment to you. I will talk to the VA administrator specifically about this clinic here. And one of the challenges, and this is one of the things that drives me crazy, is access for this one. And I know it's where it is. But to go through security, to go, you know, you got to have more flexible access. There are veterans who don't want to go through that security system. And I respect that. I'm not going to hear to complain about that. But I'm just telling you that's one of multiple pieces. For example, out in the Mat-Su, we've exceeded our veterans' capacity at that clinic. So what are we doing now? We're doing for probably the first ever in the country, a partnership. South Central has a brand new hospital clinic there. Beautiful facility. Whole top floor is empty. So what are we doing? We're trying to work a deal now to move the VA, who wants to move there, and the patients want them to move there. Why? Because they can get more services rather than just the limited services. And, oh, by the way, the South Center has an incredible gym exercising program for wellness programs. So they see a combination of the two. What does that do? That gets better access, and we have a better draw of the type of physicians that are there. When you have a small clinic, that's what this one is, to be very frank, you have limitations of what can be offered. So we're trying to do some leveraging. We may do the same thing in Kenai with the new Kenaisi facility down there. It's a beautiful, unbelievable medical facility. And then we have this CBOC that is like, you know, a sardine can. And yet, we got a lot of veterans down in the peninsula. You know, but yet they can't, you know, they got to drive all the way to Anchorage. And what we're trying to do is say, no, what you should be able to do is get your service closest to home and expand the capacity. We think when we can do that, you'll end up with better services than you receive today. On this one, I'll work with staff and we'll look at this one specifically down here. Because Southeast is even more complicated because you do get choices. You can fly to Seattle or Anchorage. Who wants to do that, right? You want to get your service closest to home. So I'll take it on my personal list. And I see this administrator on a regular basis, so.
I'm expecting a meeting here in another month, maybe 6 weeks.
With?
Susan
Yeager. Oh, she's coming down?
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's what we want. That's the, and I'm just telling you, when we've inquired and pushed Susan, she has been really responsive. But, you know, we know there's been some issues. I mean, when I first came in 09, I can, you know, the files were thick. I mean, Sally was inundated. Sean and my staff all over Alaska was inundated. And what we knew right then, there was a systematic problem. And we knew, honestly, sometimes it's just a couple people in the system that are clogging the system, and we had to kind of carefully manage that. And we've done it. Now we have some, you know, Susan is very good. It's actually the person, when the opening came open, we recommended to the administration, this is who you want to hire. You do not want to interview anyone else. I don't care what person might want to transfer or what person might have some views in life or what political thing you have out there. This is the person we want in place. And they did it. And that gives us a little more to do it. But if you can share that, make sure I have a copy of that, then Susan will be down in 6 weeks or so, and then I'll talk to her prior to that. I'll talk to her prior to that.
We might be slightly out of order here. I need to check. But there was also a discussion about request for the senator to elaborate a little bit on the status of veterans COLA and more on the question of the services at the clinic here in Juneau.
Let me answer your question. It's especially because even when you go up to the court system, there's another one, which is kind of weird if you've already made it through, but you got another one that you go through. But put that aside for a second. That's why I said they didn't have to take that, but they took it because it was cheaper. And technically, they can make a request not to be in that location. Because the federal building, example A, is you go to Anchorage, that federal building is like a ghost town. I mean, if you've ever been in there recently, first off, it's ugly inside, it's dark, it's dingy. Again, you go to the office, the logs are empty. Federal offices are not required to go in there. They are part of the GSA offerings that have to occur. The challenge you have in this area is limited space. Now, saying that, I'm a believer. That's why I want to take a personal look at this, as we're doing in Mat-Su and Kenai, which are not through security systems. You know, you walk in an office building. It's like going to a doctor's office. No different. And for all the reasons you just said, plus the cost of that, I think we want to re-examine. You know, that was put in, I think it was within the first year I got in the office, I think, if I remember right. So it was in its transition. So we now have some capacity to work with GSA and have them re-examine. The question will be, can they? Do we have to put some allocation of resource to it? So I'm not a big fan of where it is. I think it is just, I think it, you want people, especially on mental health issues, you want to have as few barriers as possible. You want as much accessibility as possible. Because otherwise, every simple barrier you put up, that turns into a complex barrier for those that are experiencing mental illness. There's just no question about it. And so, when we talk to Susan, we'll have the same conversation. I forget how many square feet. It's not a big clinic, and I know that. But if there's a better way to do it, we should examine it. I'm happy to do that. Absolutely. And we've done it in other locations, and we've had success. And now they have a new kind of thinking of how they want to develop. I mean, we're becoming, in a lot of ways, an experimental place on healthcare for VA. I mean, this whole issue with 26 tribes, the hassle I went through. At one point, I had the secretary of the VA on one phone, hung up, got the secretary of the Health and Human Services on another phone. I couldn't get an agreement out of her. I had to get back on. I mean, it was like, this is crazy. This just seems so logical. It's all the same tax dollars, and why wouldn't we want to take care of our veterans at the end of the day? So, on this one, we will, when we have the conversation, we'll also have the conversation about the space issue. Because it's not a complicated, especially like what we're doing in Mat-Su with South Central. I mean, they are so excited. The partnership is going to be unbelievable if this works. Because if it works, one, we lower costs. Two, we can share services so that veteran comes in. Because, you know, the South Central Clinic has everything from eye doctors to dental to physical to wellness. So the clinic, which is more limited, now you have cross services and it expands the capacity for a veteran. Instead of them coming one time, then going to another building, one stop shop. And that's when you have a veteran that's finally decided to get their benefits. Because as you know, there's veterans who want nothing to do with the system, not because they're, mad at the system in the sense of the VA. They're kind of served their time, they're done. They don't want any more to do with the military or anything else. They're done. But yet there's these services sitting there for them to take advantage of. So we're trying to figure out how to make it easier for them. In rural Alaska, it's really a problem. I mean, think about Nome area. I mean, 800 veterans, though. That's a lot of veterans. A sizable amount are not receiving benefits. They've earned them. They're due, but they're not getting them. So one of the things that the hospital has done is they have an outreach person. What does that person do? Tries to find, it's a veteran. He's trying to find other veterans to tell them about their program and availability of services so they can get signed up, so they can get them in to get the benefits they've earned. But you'd be amazed how many of these veterans just have no interest. So we're trying to figure it out because they earned them, they deserve them. We want them to have them, or at least be available. So we'll follow up on the location. I've heard this one more than too many times.
The questions are now aligned with the answers, I'm happy to say. I think we've got it squared away, and very, very interesting stuff. The senator came all the way to Juneau to talk to vets, and we helped put out the word, and it appeared to me, just looking at the crowd, there were maybe 16 or 18 veterans in the audience, of whom at least a dozen were members of Veterans for Peace. So we felt sort of a private audience with the good senator. That said, I would like to point out that the next question didn't really talk specifically about benefits and things like that. It raised the disturbing question of sexual misconduct within the ranks. A recent report indicated that there was a real problem with the sexual harassment and assault in the Alaska Air National Guard. And the point was raised that the commander-in-chief of the Guard, who is the governor of Alaska, had apparently done nothing, at least nothing publicly or visibly, to address this issue. And the concern was expressed that this not only is a terrible crime, but it also destroys morale, and it also calls into question the legitimacy of the command structure. Senator Begich responded as follows.
There are two bills that we will be debating in probably about 2 weeks here on how you deal with sexual assault and harassment within the military, and I support the Gillibrand bill that kind of moves it away from the command structure, so yes, an independent review of this. Now, saying that, there's a reason, in all due respect to the Alaska Guard folks, we had heard quite a bit of this, probably, Sean, you remind me, I want to say 3 years, maybe, and we then made a request directly. There's a reason why those reports exist now, because we pushed the envelope on it. We caught the National Front, there's called the Guard Bureau. We went directly to them. We bypassed the state because we get no real response. And we went directly to them and said, okay, your job, you know, you're the Guard Bureau, you oversee the guards, you need to get in here and review this. And there was kind of a couple different issues. There were the sexual assault, sexual harassment issue over here, and then there was abuse of power and leadership over here. And on a disconnected, but yet two kind of separate issues. So we have an incredible record on this that we pushed out hard because we saw, as you rightfully pointed out, the commander-in-chief of the state, guard, in this case, the governor, we weren't seeing him action. And so we went over his head directly to the Guard Bureau. And that's why you're able to review a report now, as well as another report on these issues. And that will, we believe, I'm trying to be careful here because there's some, again, issues that are happening that we believe that will start to shape some results here. And we are watching this very closely because we started this issue by kind of, here we heard from a lot of Guard members. And for, you know, to be frank with you, you know, we get a lot of issues that come in our office. And, you know, someone might be just a disgruntled employee that's fired or, you know, upset, so we log in, but we work it like a case. But what we were seeing was this frequency. And that told us, okay, there's something different going on here than just an employee upset because maybe they didn't get a promotion or they got assigned to some duty that they didn't like or whatever. It was a little more frequent. And how I also knew it, Phil, I could be walking anywhere in the state. And if there's a guard member, here's what would happen. We'd be at some event or something. They'd come up, shake my hand, say thank you. And then they'd whisper to me, thank you. I know exactly what they're talking about. Because, as you know, in the military, it's a tight group. Things happen. Enlisted folks will be talking to enlisted folks very quick. Lower-ranked members will be starting. And that's when I knew, okay, there's something happening. So we're watching it. These reports are forcing some. We'll see where the governor goes or doesn't, but we will utilize the Bureau in D.C. to put the pressure on. And we have no qualms about doing that. So, and I think they didn't like our letters, to be frank with you. But, you know, yeah, there's two parts to psyche. On that last part, there are two bills that we will be debating in probably about 2 weeks here on how you deal with sexual assault and harassment within the military. And I support the Gillibrand bill that kind of moves it away from the command structure so you have some independent review of this. Now, saying that, there's a reason, in all due respect to the Alaska Guard folks, we had heard quite a bit of this, probably, Sean, you remind me, I want to say 3 years, maybe?
Yeah.
And we then made a request direct. There's a reason why those reports exist now, because we pushed the envelope on it. We caught the national front, there's called the Guard Bureau. We went directly to them. We bypassed the state because we were getting no real response. And we went directly to them and said, okay, your job, you know, you're the Guard Bureau, you oversee the guards, you need to get in here and review this. And there was kind of a couple different issues. There was the sexual assault, sexual harassment issue over here, and then there was abuse of power and leadership over here. And on a disconnected, but yet two kind of separate issues. So we have an incredible record on this that we pushed out hard because we saw, as you rightfully pointed out, the commander-in-chief of the state, guard, in this case, the governor, we weren't seeing him action. And so we went over his head directly to the Guard Bureau. And that's why you're able to review a report now, as well as another report on these issues. And that will, we believe, I'm trying to be careful here because there's some, again, issues that are happening that we believe that will start to shape some results here. And we are watching this very closely, because we started this issue by kind of here we heard from a lot of guard members, and for you know to be frank with you, you know we get a lot of issues that come in our office, and you know someone might be just a disgruntled employee that's fired or you know upset, so we log in, but we work it like a case. But what we were seeing was this frequency, and that told us okay, there's something different going on here than just an employee upset because maybe they didn't get a promotion or they got assigned to some duty that they didn't like or whatever. It was a little more frequent. And how I also knew it, Phil, I could be walking anywhere in the state. And if there was a guard member, here's what would happen. We'd be at some event or something. They'd come up, shake my hand, say thank you. And they'd whisper to me, thank you. I knew exactly what they're talking about. Because, as you know, in the military, it's a tight group. Things happen. Enlisted folks will be talking to enlisted folks very quick. Lower rank members will be starting, and that's when I knew, okay, there's something happening. So we're watching it. These reports are forcing some. We'll see where the governor goes or doesn't, but we will utilize the Bureau in D.C. to put the pressure on. And we have no qualms about doing that. So, and I think they didn't like our letters, to be frank with you. But, you know, I'm on the Gillibrand bill. She's on the McCaskill bill. There's the two fundamental differences. The McCaskill bill keeps it in the command structure. That's the difference. The Gillibrand bill moves it out of the command structure, and I support that.
Yeah, that's better.
That's the fundamental difference, and here's why I support that. I sat with, in Anchorage, probably, I don't know, some time ago, we had a round robin with John Tester, if I remember. Was it John? Yeah, John Tester. He was with folks from the sexual assault community in the sense of... And Gillibrand, yeah. Oh, it was Gillibrand, that's right. That's right, it's Gillibrand. And we had a round robin. No, there's two. There was that one that we did that night, which you're right, that's right. That was a really good one. We have two that we've done. One we did at YWCA. So we've done two, one with Tester, Senator Tester from Montana, and one with Gillibrand. And here's the common. And these were from not only people who worked in the arena, you know, Star and Awake, but also who were military folks who work in this arena in the system, who sat and said to us, you got to move it out of the system. You have some command structure, but then you got to move it out at some point. And that's the fundamental difference. That's why McCaskill's bill keeps it, you know, I she has some good improvements in certain pieces, but the fundamental difference. They're both tenacious senators, let me tell you. They're like, Gillibrand has, I believe now, 52, 53 sponsors. McCaskill has a little less. And what we've decided as leadership, that we'll allow both bills to come to the floor and basically have a kind of a knock-it-down, drag-out fight to see which one prevails, which can be a little bit dangerous because the fundamental difference is in system or out of system. Probably 90% of those bills are very similar, but that 10% that actually does make the difference of how fundamental this bill is. And I don't know if we can get 60 on either one. We need 60 to push a filibuster. So I know. Isn't this crazy? Because what's amazing is, if we do these, let's say these two votes occur, the odds are every senator, maybe a couple won't, but every senator probably will vote yes on one or both of the bills. But yet we probably won't be able to get to 60 to pass because we all agree we got to do something about it. So we got to find some compromise. And right now, Gillibrand and McCaskill are kind of at loggerheads. We are trying through leadership to get them to kind of enlarge. Our theory is that we can draw them to the floor, both bills, they might see that there's an option to get this thing passed if they just work it out. But it's a fundamental difference, so it's a hard one to crack. It's a little surprising to me, actually, because McCaskill, who's usually anti-Pentagon, is actually pro-Pentagon establishment. That's usually not her MO. Her MO is beating the holy hell out of them. I mean, she's like constantly, you know, on contracting, on all, just constantly. But for some reason, she's aligned. I don't understand what it is. But they're both coming, and probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So the fireworks are going to happen, but we got to do something here. Because just a fundamental reason, you know, the victims that are victimized here. And for the other reason Phil said, I mean, it just is a huge tarnish on our military. Because it's a small percentage, but yet everyone now thinks it's just rampant everywhere. It's a higher percentage than it ever should be, and it should be zero. And we know that. And we'll have to work double time to get this worked on. I've had a lot of generals come into my office on this issue because they want it kept kind of the same, and they're trying to improve things they've claimed to me. But I said, fundamentally, you can't have your commander or someone, because they are...
can't run the trial.
Right. Well, their argument is, well, we'll have other people do it. Well, the problem is in the military, you guys know this, today you could be a captain over here or a lieutenant or a major, and next thing you know, you're maybe in that unit 4 years out because you rotated. You know, your rotations may put you in there by... And now you're working with people you were prosecuting or you were the judge on, right? I mean, this is very problematic. I mean, so that's the fundamental difference. So. And Gillibrand, you should see some of her commentary on the floor. I think you'd be, she is not going to let this thing rest. She has beat down the leadership, Harry Reid, on this one. I'm in leadership, and so I'm enjoying this because I get to be the voice for her in the leadership meeting about, let's bring this thing to the floor. And they're opposed because they're afraid to divide the caucus. My view is, welcome to legislating. This is how it works. And you know what? We'll see where it all plays out at the end of the day, because fundamentally we got to do something. So it'll be interesting. I think it's a good policy to change this. We just got to get there.
Senator Begich responding to the question about sexual assault and what the Senate was doing. Well, unknown to the senator at that time, but I can announce tonight, that the Senate today voted 97-0. Which is rare indeed to have a unanimous vote in the U.S. Senate on anything. They voted today to basically adopt the McCaskill bill, where they leave the prosecution of military sexual crimes within the military. And so the Gilliland bill, which was voted on and failed to garner the 60 votes necessary, did not pass, but certainly with that type of power behind it, it is a clear indication to the National Guard and the public and everybody else that Congress is taking this seriously. The next step, of course, is whether it'll pass the House, and there are various theories on that, including that it will pass as a standalone bill, or that it could be appended to the military budget bill. So stay tuned. Action is happening. And it was interesting to hear the senator's perspective on this issue right as it was developing. There was another question, too, which remains hot as a matter of public policy. and that had to do with the Iran sanctions bill. The Iran sanctions bill is being used to hold veterans' benefits bill hostage. And as John Dunker, who framed the question, said, frankly, Senator, I believe you're in a unique position on this. The senator had sponsored the Iran sanctions bill, and the senator responded as follows.
Why did the veterans bill collapse last week? It's because they wanted to put an Iran sanction bill on there, or amendment, I should say, that would put additional sanctions on. I'm on that bill, but I'm also not in favor of bringing that to the floor right now. Because here was the objective. There's a two-part objective on that thing. Because I'm a little nervous, you know, to be very frank, I mean, it's good. On one hand, we're having discussions with Iran, but I don't trust them. I don't trust anything they're doing. But so we're moving there. So a group of us felt, one, I'm a big sanctions supporter. I've always supported sanctions. And the reason I did is because it forces, I mean, why are we having Iran talk to us? Because the sanctions we had prior to that, their economy was getting crippled. Now that that's happened, there's a group of us, 57, 58 of us, depending on how you count, there's one that floats a little bit, that sponsored a pretty strong sanctions bill. And the White House didn't like it because they feared that we would interfere with these talks. And our point was, you know, if you fail, we got to move on sanctions again. But why not make us kind of the person out there, the group out there that you can have a negotiation and say, look, if we don't get this resolved, this sanctions bill's coming. But what's happened is raw partisan politics. Because that sanction bill's bipartisan. Even the most aggressive, supportive group of Israel, AIPAC, has said, don't bring the bill to the floor. You know, AIPAC would be the first to say, bring the bill, right? But they said, don't bring it. Tiny. But you have a couple Republicans, to be very frank with you, are fighting this issue to just force the president in an embarrassing position. And I understand that. That's too bad, because you're playing with lives here. You're playing with a very risky game here. So we are playing this role very careful. And you're right, as a sponsor of that bill, I have a certain very unique role. Also because I sit in the fifth position of leadership of the majority, I'm in those leadership meetings. As a matter of fact, in between some of our meetings, actually just before I went on the floor of the Senate, we think the moment is you keep those sanctions hot and ready. You let the president do his thing. We hold the position of pushing those back on if necessary, but don't let this politics get in the middle of it. And that's what's going on. And it's really bad because it could get us in a crossways here. So you're right. I'm using that position of my sponsorship under very carefully. I've had conversations with the president, with Secretary Kerry on this specific issue. And I think we're playing it right. We're not the ones driving it right now. There's a group of sponsors that have said, we support sanctions, but this is not the moment to push him onto the floor of the U.S. Senate. And yet there's a couple of people who want to do that. That's too bad because it's creating a little, it's creating some friction that we don't need. They killed the veterans bill. You know, we got to resolve this issue with Iran at some point because here's what's going to happen. It won't be us first strike. It'll be Israel. Because their level of understanding with nuclear weapon capacity is much different than ours. We have a higher threshold. We can agree or disagree with that. They have a lower threshold. So here's what the scenario could be. If they move forward on Iran, moves forward on development, and they get the threshold that Israel thinks is too dangerous for them, and they will do probably, my bet, is individual strikes. The danger of that is, with us agreeing or not, the international community will assume we did. So now we're in. That's why it's a moment in time here. That's pretty dicey. Well, that's going on over here. You know, all you have to do is look at your front page of the paper today, right? Over here, Russia and other things, there's a lot of fluid activity going on here. We got to be very careful. And I know there's raw politics being played in D.C. right now because we're in election season. But this is a little more dicier. So we've gotten ourselves in a little dicey situation with Iran. We got to work through this, but we're ready to put these sanctions on if necessary. Well, we got to do the timing right. The second part of this is we now have a veterans bill that could have helped a lot of veterans get better care, get better services, and it's dead. We got to figure out how to bring it back again.
So that was the senator's response to the question about the interaction between the Iran sanctions bill and the veterans benefits bill. It looks like a complicated process, and there's no question that both of our senators, I believe it's fair to say, are keeping their eye on the ball and are trying to advance the interests of veterans, even in this context of burgeoning international tensions facing Iran, etc. The final question that was asked of the senator was regarding the blatant partisanship that seems to prevail in the Congress on some issues, including those issues of public interest with respect to foreign policy, specifically regarding the, to be totally blunt about it, but not political, the Republican attacks on the president with respect to his efforts to come to grips with foreign policies regarding Crimea and Syria. The senator responded as follows.
There's plenty of times, as you know, Phil, that I've disagreed with the president. But as commander in chief, and he has to make a decision, we have to support whatever that decision is. Now, we may like it or not, but if, as Americans, we have a role and responsibility. That's why it's a unique system we have in this country, with a civilian commander in chief. There's a reason we have that. Now, that does not mean that we give up our rights as a legislative body, as you know, through the War Powers Act and others, of actions we can take to counterbalance against that at a certain point. But we have to be very careful because, as you probably saw my quotes in the paper today about Syria, the president, I think we got ourselves weakened by actions or inactions of how that system works. I get the president has two roles, policymaker, commander-in-chief. Sometimes these cross, but usually you don't want them to cross. Because this one may be, you know, as I always say, the president will always have more information than anyone in Congress or anyone in this country. Because he gets information that we cannot get. And he has to make decisions. Now, we get informed at a certain level, which is also, I'll just give you a little side note, you'll find this interesting. When I was sworn in, I go to the bunker to be explained how I get information, CIA and so forth. So I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is where they do like the top secret clearance stuff, right? That I got to learn certain things. The fact that I got elected was my top secret clearance. That's how it works. I was amazed, actually. But it also gives people like myself a lot of information that helps me kind of craft where I'm going. But it's hard because some of the members cross policy and commander-in-chief into the same category. Policy is different. Commander-in-chief is sometimes you got to make a decision that may be very unpopular from a national security perspective, needed, but unpopular. And I recognize that maybe, as we talked about Syria, I disagree with him on Syria, where I think he was going. And he heard that from me. But I understand that, as a commander-in-chief, he might have done something, and I may not have liked it. And I may, as an American, say, we have to do what's right with commander-in-chief, but I may have a policy decision that I'm going to make that may counter that or balance it later. It's a difficult, and it's very frustrating because, you know, we're all in this together. I mean, at the end of the day, when we pull that trigger, literally, we're going to be in something or not. And we have to figure out, as Americans, what's our role and responsibility. And it doesn't mean that you are less American, you know, because that's what you hear sometimes. You know, I'm so mad at Karzai. I've made it very clear to the administration that we should just take everything out. You know, if he's not willing to work with us, forget it. We're going to put our people at risk even more. And, you know, I know what I'll hear from people. you know, it's a cut and run kind of view. No. You know, I've been to Afghanistan, you know, twice. I've seen what our troops have done. They are exceptional people. But now we're into the decision of the policy of the long-term relationships we're going to have with this country. That's a different role we're about to play. Commander-in-Chief role was to move forces, and now it's a policy that we have to deal with. And, you know, no one is un-American. We just have different views of what's called. But we've gotten into this. You're this or you're that. You're with me or you're not, which is really not a fair debate. You may differ, but at the end of the day, there's a reason why we live here.
And ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the remarks and the meeting that we are happy to play back to you from Senator Mark Begich's visit to Juneau last weekend. I wanted to thank a few people for helping us put this program on the air. First of all, of course, Mark Begich and his Juneau staff. It took a, you know, an incredibly busy 3 or 4 days here in town, and he left that meeting and went straight to the airport. Not sure if he was going to get into Washington because of weather. So I hope he didn't have to spend the night in Cleveland. That said, I should also point out that members of Veterans for Peace really helped to assemble the troops. They showed up, and one in particular, Rich Moniak, I don't know where my brain went. Rich Moniak did the editing and working with the technical aspects of the tape so that it could play clearly and that you could understand it. And finally, here in the studio, making sure that all the buttons are pushed and the magic is properly organized, John and Dolly Kremers provided the technical assistance. So with all of that and all those kudos, let us remember that this is an uncertain world. We are now faced with Russian incursions into Ukraine, the occupation of Crimea, the development of Syria, Iran, Afghanistan, and I don't know that we're going to be asked to do it, but somebody, I hope, will clean up the mess that we left in Iraq. There are also other issues brewing elsewhere in the world. So we need to pay attention. We need to give thoughtful attention to these matters. And we need to continue to advocate that as these decisions are made by our Commander-in-Chief and by our Congress, that the imperative of peace is evermost in their mind. That said, we're going to take a brief musical interlude now. We're going to listen to Colette Costa sing the song No Man's Land.
Well, how do you do, Private William McBride? Do you mind if I sit down here by your graveside and rest for a while in the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. And I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the glorious fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick and I hope you died clean. But William McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the pipe slowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sound the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the the sun shining down on these green fields of France? The warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plough. No gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard that's still no man's land, the countless white crosses and mute witness stand to man's blind indifference to his fellow man, and a whole generation to a butcher. Did the bugles sound the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers for the forest? And I can't help but wonder, no Willie McBride, do all those who lie here know why they died? Did you really believe them when they told you? Did you really believe that this war would end wars? Well, the suffering, the sorrow, the glory, the shame, the killing, the dying, it was all done in vain. For Willie McBride, it's all happened again and again and again. Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Did the bugles play the last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the And so we conclude our program, Peace Talk, for tonight. We are delighted that you were able to spend the time with us. Once again, thanks to Senator Mark Begich for his willingness to meet with veterans and for the work he is doing in Washington with his colleagues, Senator Murkowski and Congressman Young. And thank you as well to Rich Moniak for the great work of editing that was accomplished. And thank you to John and Dolly Kramers, and also, of course, to Jeff Brown, the ubiquitous, inevitable Jeff Brown, who keeps us all straight and narrow and on the air. That said, good night. Thank you very much. And don't forget, every chance you can, wage peace.